There was nothing in the envelope except a miniature baseball bat. It was the kind of thing sold as a souvenir or given away as a token. It was plain, lacquered softwood, the color of honey. It was about an inch wide around the barrel, and would have been about 15 inches long, except that it was broken near the end of the handle. It had been broken deliberately. It had been partially sawn through and then snapped where it was weak. The raw end had been scratched and scraped to make it look accidental. "I don't have a temper problem," Armstrong said. "But you're right. My father did. We lived in a small town in Oregon, kind of lonely and isolated. It was a lumber town, basically. It was a mixed sort of place. The mill owners had big houses. The crew chiefs had smaller houses. The crews lived in shanties or rooming houses. There was a school. My mother owned the pharmacy. Down the road was the rest of the state. Up the road was virgin forest. It felt like the frontier. It was a little lawless, but it wasn't too bad. There were occasional whores and a lot of drinking, but overall it was just trying to be an American town." He went quiet for a moment, placed his hands palm down on the desk and stared at them. "I was 18. Finished with high school, ready for college, spending my last few weeks at home. My sister was away traveling somewhere. We had a mailbox at the gate. My father had made it himself in the shape of a miniature lumber mill. It was a nice thing made out of tiny strips of cedar. At Halloween in the previous year it had been smashed up. You know, the traditional Halloween thing where the tough kids go out cruising with a baseball bat, bashing mailboxes. My father heard it happening, and he chased them, but he didn't really see them. We were a little upset, because it was a nice mailbox, and destroying it seemed kind of senseless. But he rebuilt it stronger, and became kind of obsessed about protecting it. Some nights, he hid out and guarded it."
"And the kids came back," Nagley said.
Armstrong nodded. "Late that summer. Two kids in a truck with a bat. They were big guys. I didn't really know them, but I'd seen them around before, here and there. They were brothers, I think. Real hard kids. You know, delinquents. Bullies from out of town. The sort of kids you always stayed well away from. They took a swing at the box, and my dad jumped out at them, and there was an argument. They were sneering at him, threatening him, saying bad things about my mother. They said, 'Bring her on out, and we'll show her a good time with this bat. Better than you can show her.' You can imagine the gestures that went with it. So then there was a fight, and my dad got lucky. It was just one of those things. Two lucky punches, and he won. Or maybe it was his military training. The bat had busted in half, maybe against the box. I thought that would be the end of it, but he dragged the kids into the yard and got some logging chain and some padlocks and got them chained up to a tree. They were kneeling down, facing each other around the trunk. My dad's mind was gone. His temper had kicked in. He was hitting them with the broken bat. I was trying to stop him, but it was impossible. Then he said he was going to show them a good time with the bat, with the broken end, unless they begged him not to. So they begged. They begged long and loud. He went quiet again. I was there all the time. I was trying to calm my father down, that's all. But these guys were looking at me like I was participating. There was this thing in their eyes, like I was a witness to their worst moment, like I was seeing them being totally humiliated, which I guess is the worst thing you can do to a bully. There was absolute hatred in their eyes, against me, like they were saying, 'You've seen this, so now you have to die.' It was literally as bad as that."
"What happened?" Nagley asked.
"My father kept them there. He said he was going to leave them there all night and start up again in the morning. We went inside, and he went to bed, and I snuck out again an hour later. I was going to let them go, but they were already gone. They'd gotten out of the chains somehow, escaped. They never came back. I never saw them again. I went off to college, never really came home again except for visits."
"And your father died?"
Armstrong nodded. "He had blood pressure problems, which was understandable, I guess, given his personality. I kind of forgot about the two kids. It was just an episode that had happened in the past. But I didn't really
forget about them. I always remembered the look in their eyes. I can see it right now. It was stone-cold hatred. It was like two cocky thugs who couldn't stand to be seen any other way than how they chose to be seen. Like I was committing a mortal sin just for happening to see them losing. Like I was doing something to them. Like I was their enemy. They stared at me. I gave up trying to understand it. I'm no kind of psychologist. But I never forgot that look. When that package came, I wasn't puzzled for a second who had sent it, even though it's been nearly 30 years. "Did you know their names?" Reacher asked. Armstrong shook his head. "I didn't know much about them, except I guess they lived in some nearby town." "What are you going to do?"
"I know what I'd like to do."
"What's that?"
"I'd like to break both your arms and never see you again as long as I live, because if you'd spoken up on Election Day, Froelich would still be alive."
"Why the hell didn't you?" Nagley asked. Armstrong shook his head. There were tears in his eyes. "Because I had no idea. It was serious. I really didn't. I promise you, on my daughter's life. Don't you see? I just thought it was supposed to remind me or unsettle me. I wondered whether maybe in their minds they still thought I was in the wrong back then, and it was supposed to be a threat of political embarrassment or exposure or something. Obviously, I wasn't worried about that because I wasn't in the wrong back then. Everybody would understand that. And I couldn't see any other logical reason for sending it. I was 30 years older. So were they. I'm a rational adult. I assumed they were. So I thought it was maybe just an unpleasant joke. I didn't conceive of any danger in it. I absolutely promise you that. I mean, why would I? So it unsettled me for an hour and then I dropped it. Maybe I half expected some kind of lame follow-up, but I figured I'd deal with that when it happened. But there was no follow-up. It didn't happen. Not as far as I knew. Because nobody told me. Until now. Until you told me. And according to Stuyvesant, you shouldn't be telling me even now. And people have suffered. And died. Christ! Why did he keep me out of the loop? I could have given him the whole story if he just asked.
Nobody spoke.
See, you're right and you're wrong. I knew who and why, but I didn't know all along. I didn't know the middle. I knew the beginning, and I knew the end. I knew as soon as the shooting started, believe me. I mean, I just knew. It was an unbelievable shock. Out of the blue, like, this is the follow-up? It was an insane development. It was like half expecting a rotten tomato to be thrown at me one day and getting a nuclear missile instead. I thought the world had gone mad. You want to blame me for not speaking out? Okay, go ahead and blame me. But how could I have known? How could I have predicted this kind of insanity?
Silence for a beat.
So that's my guilty secret. Not that I did anything wrong 30 years ago, but that I didn't have the right kind of imagination to see the implications of the package 3 weeks ago.
Nobody spoke.
Should I tell Stuyvesant now?
Your choice, Reacher said. There was a long pause. Armstrong the man faded away again, and Armstrong the politician came back to replace him.
I don't want to tell him. Bad for him, bad for me. People have suffered and died. It'll be seen as a serious misjudgment on both our parts. He should have asked. I should have told.
Reacher nodded. So leave it to us. You'll know our secret and we'll know yours.
And we'll all live happily ever after.
Well, we'll all live, Reacher said.
Descriptions?
Nagley asked.
Just kids. Maybe my age. I only remember their eyes.
What's the name of the town?
Underwood, Oregon, where my mother still lives, where I'm going in an hour.
And these kids were from the area?
Armstrong glanced at Reacher.
And you predicted they'll go home to wait.
Yes, Reacher said. I did.
And I'm heading right there.
Don't worry about it, Reacher said. That theory is way out of date now. I assume they expected you'd remember them, and I assume they didn't anticipate the communication breakdown between yourself and the Secret Service.
and they wouldn't want you to be able to lead them right to their door. Therefore, their door has changed. They don't live in Oregon anymore. That's one thing we can be absolutely sure of.
So how are you going to find them?
Reacher shook his head.
We can't find them. Not now. Not in time. They'll have to find us, in Wyoming, at the memorial service.
I'm going there, too, with minimal cover. So just hope it's all over before you arrive.
Should I tell Stuyvesant?
Armstrong asked again.
Your choice, Reacher said again. I can't cancel the appearance. That wouldn't be right.
No, Reacher said. I guess it wouldn't.
I can't tell Stuyvesant now.
No, Reacher said. I guess you can't. Armstrong said nothing. Reacher stood up to leave, and Nagley did the same.
One last thing, Reacher said. We think these guys grew up to be cops.
Armstrong sat still. He started to shake his head, but then he stopped and looked down at the desk. His face clouded, like he was hearing a faint 30-year-old echo.
Something during the beating. I only half heard it, and I'm sure I discounted it at the time. But I think at one point they claimed their dad was a cop. They said he could get us in big trouble.
Reacher said nothing. The protection agents showed them out. They walked the length of the canvas tent and stepped off the curb into the street, turned east and got back on the sidewalk, and settled in for the trek to the subway. It was late morning and the air was clear and cold. The neighborhood was deserted. Nobody was out walking. Nagley opened the envelope Stuyvesant had given her. It contained a check for $5,000. The memo line was written up as Professional Consultation. Reacher's envelope contained two checks. One was for the same $5,000 fee, and the other was for his audit expenses, repaid to the exact penny.
We should go shopping, Nagley said. We can't go hunting in Wyoming dressed like this.
I don't want you to come with me, Reacher said.